Hey, good morning, everyone. Welcome to BobbyOnFire.com. And I'm Bobby, and my friend John is with us.
Good morning, Bobby.
Good morning, John. John is socially distanced in Arizona while I'm in Washington. I'm on Puget Sound enjoying a sunshiny day. So I want to talk about this story that I'm going to tell you. The reason I'm telling you this story this week is because many fire departments and many fire organizations around the country, around now, are getting ready for the wildland fire season. Now, some places, like the South, on the Southwest, they're already in fire season, but many other places around the country are doing their annual refresher. And for those of you who are not firefighters, every year we do an annual refresher to kind of get back into shape, get back into our thinking, being ready, being prepared for wildland fires. Because many departments and many organizations haven't been on a wildland fire all winter. And so we do a refresher. It's usually an 8-hour refresher training or 6 hours. And many folks are going through their first time wildland fire training. And that basic training for wildland fires consists of about a 3-day class, minimally 3 days. And people in those classes could be experienced structure firefighters, but who haven't had the wildland training yet. And so you may have rookies going through that training. You may have experienced firefighters going through that training. And so that training is going on right now. And so I'm going to be speaking to one of those classes here in another couple weeks. And I was preparing for what I was going to say to this group. I was going to be the keynote speaker, and I was preparing what I was going to say. And as I was thinking about it, I thought, boy, this is really a good message for everyone who might be preparing and who might be going out to a wildland fire this summer. So let me set the scene, because I think it's important to keep the big picture in mind and remember why we're doing the training. But let me paint the picture for you. This is many years ago, and I was a captain on a fire department, and I was dispatched to a large wildland fire, maybe 100 miles from my department, and I was bringing a strike team of engines with me. I was the strike team leader, and I was bringing a strike team of engines. That's 5 engines, and we had a water tender, a water truck. Water supply truck, call them water tenders, and we're going to this fire. Well, we got dispatched around, maybe 2 p.m. By the time we get there, it's probably 5. We get a little briefing. We get some mission to go and scout things out. There's a subdivision. It's in the pines with a brush understory. And there's a subdivision out there in the forest, and so we worked that evening and all night long, preparing for the fire to move into the subdivision. And this strike team of engines I had, these were all municipal departments, fire district, municipals, and type 1 engines, meaning city engines, and we were prepping. We were putting in hose lays, we were putting in line, we were working around the houses. So we worked that evening all night long and now into the next day. Now, there was lots of activity going on. There were lots of hotshot crews working in the area. There was a dozer, the helicopters, the air tankers, you know, all of that kind of stuff. If you get the picture, fire burning, there's a burnout operation, we're working behind these houses, and it's, you know, so it's an active, busy fire scene. But remember, we've been up the day before, we've been up all night, and now we're into the next day. Now, the strike team of engines that I had, they were made up of several different fire departments from around the state. One of the engines in particular had just attended their wildland fire class. The same 36-hour, I think it's about a 36-hour course that fire departments are still taking, that basic wildland fire behavior. Now, it doesn't matter if you are a 20-year veteran on a city fire department, if you want to go fight fire off your fire department's jurisdiction on a wildland fire, you got to take this training. It's required most places. It's certainly required from a national standpoint. And so this one particular engine that I want to talk about, they had just taken their training just about a week or two before this fire. They had just taken their wildland training. They had never been on a wildland fire other than maybe a vacant lot in their city full of weeds. You know, that was the extent of their wildland fire experience. Now, they had taken their wildland class, and these were experienced firefighters. This is a city that is busy. These guys were paramedic engine company. They were running all the time. So this wasn't some slow backwater little volunteer department. This was a big city department. These guys were experienced, but they weren't experienced at the wildland. And I'm making this point because they attended the training not knowing what they were ever going to see. And I'm going to tell you now what they experienced. So we were on the fire, and we had hose lays spread out, you know, I don't know, thousands of feet of hose spread out behind the houses. We were pre-treating the houses. We were busy. And I had been walking the fire line. I was supervising these six apparatus, the five engines and the water tender. And I had been walking the fire line to see where my adjoining forces were. I was in charge of the structure protection in the subdivision. And I went to walk down the fire line, down this, they called it a canyon, but it was really more of a draw. It was not quite really that steep, but it was a drainage. And I had walked down the fire line to check in with these adjoining forces. And when I went down to where the adjoining forces were, I thought, oh, this crews, these are not, it's a dangerous area. There was a lot of unburned fuel. There had been a burnout operation, but the burnout operation really was incomplete. So really what it had done was really dried out the brush and crept around under the brush and dried out the leaves, making it really ready to burn now. And of course, over the brush were the pine trees. So now you have, you know, a really hazardous situation, an incomplete burnout with the fire still creeping around and brush ready to burn. So I had checked in with this, the supervisor down there, and I just didn't like where they were. And I called my supervisor, the ops chief on the fire, and said, boy, I don't really like what's going on down there. It doesn't look good. And he says, well, get your crews to extend your hose lays down the canyon, down the fire line, to their location and give them a hand. Well, in the meantime, I get a call back from that guy after I walk back up to my resources, my crews, and said they're getting spot fires across the line. And I was like, wow, that seems weird that they're getting spot fires, because it was dead still. Now, we can't see anything because there's so much smoke overhead, you can't see what the fire's doing. We're not hearing anything from any lookouts. The visibility was horrible. You're under the tree canopy and it's so smoky you can't see. But they're getting spot fires across the line, which should have been, if I wasn't so tired from lack of sleep, maybe it would have jogged my memory and said, hey, spot fires, hey, something's burning, putting up some embers. I direct my resources to extend our fire lines, our hose lines down the canyon, down the fire line towards those other crews. Well, all my resources are working fine. They're doing well. This crew that had never been on a big forest fire before, they were doing fine. I was running around, you know, I was busy. Taking care of my folks, making sure they were getting their lunches, you know, sack lunches. We're out there, you know, for days, couple days now. So let's get the folks fed, make sure they got their water. The work is going on well. And at one point, I'm condensing this story. I'm not giving all the details because it gets kind of bad here, but, I get a call from my water tender driver. Now, my water tender driver was someone, if we were back at on shift, if we were back at the fire department, I was a captain. I was his captain on the engine, and he was my driver. He was my engineer on my engine. So I knew him very well, trusted him greatly, great firefighter. And he says, "Bobby, your access is cut off." He was going out to get water, this water truck. He's going out of the subdivision, going out to the main county road. He says, "Your access is cut off. You've got fire behind you. We're heading out. We're getting out of here, heading out the county road." Now, imagine I'm looking north, and I'm looking at the fire area. He's heading south, and he says, "There's fire behind me." And I'm thinking, how can there be fire behind me? The fire is in front of me. But he just says, "Access is cut off. We're heading out of here." And I was like, what? And then I start hearing other reports of spot fires. And then I get a radio call from those adjoining forces that I had just been down to check on earlier. And the crew rep calls me on the radio and says, "We got fire all around us. We're deploying shelters. Deploying fire shelters." And for those of you who are not firefighters, a shelter is that aluminum, heavy, heavy aluminum material that you get into as your last ditch way to survive a forest fire. You don't do that. That's not a good thing. If you're climbing into a fire shelter, all hope is lost, and you're just hoping that that's going to save you. So I'm like, he's deploying shelters. What the hell is going on? So now I've got people. I just sent my strike team of engines putting hose lay down towards them. So I'm getting on the radio now, calling everyone, "Get out of there, everybody up, come everybody out of the canyon. Get up to the houses and then work your way to the safety zone." Now, the safety zone, for those of you who don't know, is an area that is cleared of fuel that is safe to sit in and wait for a fire to burn over. We didn't have a really good safety zone, but we had a dozer who at that moment was building as a safety zone. So, remember, this is 30 years ago now. So, yeah, 30 years ago, next month it'll be. So it was a long time ago. We didn't do things according to Hoyle all the time back then. So I'm calling all my folks to get out of the canyon and everybody up into the safety zone. And I remember I had about 6 hotshot crews in there working with us. And I told my guys, follow the hotshot crews, because you'll be okay if you stick with the hotshot crews, because they were much more experienced at wildland fire than my city firefighters that were working in there. In the meantime, I get a call from one of those hotshot crews who were coming up the canyon. They witnessed a firefighter from, they didn't know who he was. They just called me and said, "We've got a burned firefighter down here. We need medical assistance for him." So this crew that I had spoken about earlier that had just gone through their wildland fire training, they were paramedics. and they were right there. The rest of my crews had gone up the line already. So I said, okay, guys, look, we've got to do a rescue. Now, before you agree to this, I got to tell you, this is a seriously dangerous situation. And of course, being good firefighters, being enthusiastic and wanting to serve and wanting to perform, they said, no problem, we're ready. And they were like ready, they were already going down the line. I said, stop. I want to make sure you understand what we're going into. This is a dangerous situation. You got to listen, okay? Listen to what I'm telling you, and we're going to be very careful and cautious. But they were just like the racehorse in the starting gate, man. They were ready to go. I said, okay, just pay attention to what I'm telling you. So we start down the canyon, and we come upon Hotshot Crew, who's standing around this individual is laying on the ground. And if anyone has ever witnessed a burn victim, very, very tough to see. And this young man, was burned. His face was burned, and it was a tough situation. So first thing I do is I tell the Hotshot Crew superintendent. I said, get your crew out, everybody out. Now, the fire is burning right near us, and it's roaring. The fire is very active. This young man had just run through the flames. And the reason he ran through the flames, as we found out later, someone on the crew lost their fire shelter. He had them get in his fire shelter, and then he ran for it and had to run through the flames to get out of it. Thankfully... And oddly, his lungs were okay. He didn't breathe any of the flames. So now he's laying on the ground. Got 20-person Hotshot Crew standing there. I tell the Hotshot Superintendent, get your guys out of here. They have them go up the line, get into the safety zone. And so I had the 4-person engine company. I had the Hotshot Soup, and I had myself. And they start working on the patient. Now... For all you medics out there, forgive me, but I'm going to say something that I used to always kind of comment about. The medics, they're wanting to start a line, give them an oxygen, all good, you know, start treating them, do an assessment. But we were like right on the open door of a blast furnace. This is my imagery of it. This was no time to develop a little rapport with the patient and get a line started and get them on oxygen, and then let's get the hell out of here. But they didn't know it. This was their first big wildland fire. They didn't recognize the danger they were in. So I started yelling at them, let's go, let's get out of here. And they weren't seeing it. You know, when I watch a movie, and you know it's a cop movie or a firefighter movie, and I hear people yelling, you know, it all sounds all heroic and all that, and I think that's such bullshit. I hate when I see that on movies or TV shows, because it's so, I think, unprofessional and unusual, you know. But let me tell you, I was yelling, "Let's get out of here!" You know, I had to scream at these guys to get their attention. So. We get them on the board, on the backboard, and I think they had them on oxygen. They couldn't get a line started. There was no time. And so off we were running, up the dozer line, back up towards the subdivision, uphill, 4 firefighters carrying the patient, myself and another firefighter carrying the gear that we'd brought down. Now, we had, being good medics, they brought everything they might possibly need, you know. We had like 5 bags of gear, you know. You got a life pack 5 for you newer medics. That was state of the art, life pack 5. That was state of the art back in 1990, you know, for a cardiac monitor and all that. we had all this crap, and so I've got bags slung over my shoulders. This other firefighter's got bags slung over his shoulders, and the four firefighters are carrying the burned firefighter on the board up the line, and we're coming behind. So I'm coming up last. I want to make sure everybody's making it out of there, and we're trying to run, but it's uphill, and the firefighter that's right in front of me with his bags of gear, he drops some of his bags, and as he's dropping them, I ran right by him, and I stopped and turned around to look at him, and imagine this wall of flames, and he's silhouetted. His body is a silhouette of black with the wall of flame behind him, because the fire was coming through the understory of brush, and every once in a while it would pause, and once it paused, then the trees above it would just torch out, then the trees would just catch on fire right above it. But it was making these runs in the understory, and then it would go up into the canopy of the trees. And so the heat is pretty intense, and he's trying to get the bags on his shoulders. He's got these straps, and he's trying to put the straps over his shoulders. And I'm screaming at him, leave it, leave it, drop it, let's go. And so he finally drops the bags and runs, and we make it up out of the canyon. And there's a house right there at the end of the line, and we get behind the house because the house provides some protection from the radiant heat. So now there's six of us plus the patient. We're standing behind the house, catching our breath, not sure where the safety zone is. We know we got to keep going up to get to the safety zone. And we can hear the dozer working. We hear chainsaws working. And while we're there trying to figure out our next move, now remember, this is a super savvy hotshot superintendent who became quite well known. This is four inexperienced wildland firefighters, very, very savvy city firefighters, but first time on a big wildland fire, and me. And I was the supervisor of all this. And so while we're sitting there, catching our breath, a tree right over our heads, a big pine tree right over our heads, bursts into flames. So while we were sitting there, the embers must have been landing in that tree and just kind of creeping around in the bark and all that. And unbeknownst to us, the tree all of a sudden just bursts into flames. This is like, a 50, 60 foot pine tree, big pine tree. And burst into flames. So that's kind of a shocker, And it's like, holy crap, let's go. So off we keep running. And the other hotshot crews had made a helispot, and we were eventually able to get the patient loaded into a helicopter and medevaced him out. And then we had to sit in the safety zone waiting for things to calm down enough to go in. We had to wait while the fire burnt and died down. While we were waiting, we lost vehicles that were parked. We lost trailers. Fire engines had melted lights, and we lost 50 some homes in the subdivision. And when we thought it was safe to come out, there was probably over 100 firefighters sitting in that safety zone. And when we went out, everybody started having to double up. Not everybody, but a lot of folks had to double up. The crews didn't have their crew trucks with them, so they were riding on the tops of the engines. That hotshot superintendent and I went back down to the scene of where the crew had deployed shelters, and we found the bodies of six fatalities, and we went back, got to our trucks, and anyway, And we went back to the camp, and then life goes on. And the next day we were back to work. So there's nothing real, real good about this story, although one firefighter was saved. A lot of people survived it, and six people lost their lives. But my point of telling the story is, here we are in the end of May, and we're getting ready for fire season around most of the West. There's already fires. People have already been on fires, but you're probably taking your refresher training. Maybe you're taking your initial wildland fire training. And you, if like me, you might think, it's probably nothing's going to happen. We're going to run out. We're going to sit at a structure. If you're a city fire department, you're going to be sitting at a structure or structures, waiting to fight fire if the fire gets there. We tend to be a little bit act nonplussed about all of this. Oh, it's not going to be a big deal. It'll be fine. Well, that crew that was there who had just gone through their training, they were enthusiastic, they were good firefighters, but they had no idea what they were getting into. And they performed wonderfully. Now, when they were going through their training, did they pay attention? I don't know. Probably. But when you go through your training, do you sit back and say, this is boring, this refresher training, I've heard it every year for the last 15 years? Or do you think about all the what-ifs and how you're going to react to the what-ifs? Do you have the attitude when you go into work that day that anything can happen? Or do you walk around with your shoes untied, your boots untied, because it's no big deal? I've had a little bit of both in my career, to be honest. Some days, there's been parts of my career where I was acted real relaxed about everything. It's no big deal. I can tell you, after an incident like that occurs to you, like I just described, you tend to take life seriously, your career seriously. You tend to take training seriously. And the reason I'm telling you this story is because I want you to be serious about your upcoming refreshers, your upcoming wildland fire training. And when you go to work every day, go to work like this could be the last shift. Like this day, this shift you're working could be the one where you're called upon to perform at the best, at the highest level, because you don't know what day that's going to be. That's why we enjoy our jobs, because of that uncertainty and all the, like I've described in previous stories about the chaos. We like that. But you better perform. You better be ready. You better be prepared. So that's the whole story here. John, do you have anything you want to add or questions? Yeah, you're silenced, John. See, I got to laugh.
Was that a once in a career fire? How often would somebody in their first fire, first year, have that kind of a big fire?
Well, the problem is it's happening more and more. We used to say big fire seasons happened once every 5 years or so, and then we said once every 3 years, and now we're saying every other year. And so it didn't used to be that common, but these things are happening more and more. These kinds of incidents are happening more often. And they can happen on small fires. So it doesn't have to be a big raging fire to cause problems, to injure and kill. We just had a firefighter fatality in eastern Washington last year. So bad things are happening every year now. So with that, folks, this is one of my most serious stories that I'm posting. I hope you'll take it to heart. I hope you'll train appropriately. I hope you take your job seriously and come into shift every day ready to perform. With that, folks, I'll thank you again for listening. I appreciate everyone's support and sharing the website. And we'll check you next week with a happy story where we laugh. Thanks, everyone.